You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The extension of the role of Children's Commissioner makes Andrew Beecroft the Monitor of Treatment of Children in Secure Detention Centres. I spoke to Andrew about the power imbalance that exists between the state and vulnerable children detained without choice. I asked if we can be confident that their rights will be better upheld this way, and about Andrew's impression of how the law treats the rights of children more generally. I started by asking what secure detention centres are and how common they are here in Aotearoa.
They are places of detention and custody where children and young people are not free to leave. They are usually lock-up. They are often prison-like with high wire escape-proof fences, double-locked big metal doors, often in their own small and rather spartanly fast patient rooms. Yeah, they are, in all respects, places that you can't walk in and out of at will.
So the extension of the role of Children's Commissioner means that you will now be an independent monitor of the conditions and treatment of children and young people in centres such as these. Did this move come from the Justice Minister alone, or did you see a need and initiate the extension?
I think both. We are already looking at all the Oranga Tamariki detention centres, but we know there are also detention centres where children and young people with mental health issues who are on remand in the community and who are facing court cases but who have mental health problems. We know there are 15 or so additional detention centres where those types of children and young people are being held and they need to be checked up on.
It will be monitored not by you alone but a specialist group. Do we know yet who might be appointed to this group?
Yeah, it'll be our responsibility. We've got a staff of about 30. On that staff are specialist and trained monitors. They are child psychologists, they are former teachers of children with learning and behavioural issues. They are social workers, former police officers. We've got a wide range that are skilled and they go in. The thing is, in these detention centres, there is an enormous power imbalance. And whenever children are detained in custody, it's really important that we understand that power imbalance and we understand that really it's the most invasive power the state can ever exercise to detain children. And it's crucial that adults are watching out independently for what is happening to them.
Beyond the fact that the specialisation of a children's commissioner being appointed to this role, obviously we can assume that the rights of these children might be upheld better, but I guess what I'm trying to ask is, can we be confident that their rights will be better prioritised and upheld by your monitoring group than they were by the state?
I certainly hope so. I mean, that's our statutory role. We bring a laser-like focus from a child rights perspective with the voice of the child at the centre. We need to hear from children. What are they experiencing? What's going on? I would really hope that we prioritise their rights in a way as never before. I mean, everyone talks a good game about it. We know that children in care can easily be abused or treated badly. I mean, history shows us that. But what's crucial is that we make sure that doesn't happen anymore. And I guess I'd say this, history shows us that children in detention don't complain. The power imbalance is such that if there are complaints, as the Royal Commission in Australia said, the complaints come decades later. We need a system where children feel able to complain now. But that power imbalance, that being in detention, adults looking after children, it makes it really difficult for kids in that environment.
You wrote that our findings will be reported to several parties, including Oranga Tamariki. Findings will also include recommendations for improving conditions and treatment of those detained. I thought it was interesting to note that recent investigations into practices by Oranga Tamariki indicate widespread misconduct, neglect, mistreatment, particularly of rangatahi Māori. In light of this, there are grounds, you know, for mistrust of how much improvement might come about. will recommendations made be binding?
No, we don't have those binding powers. It's a good question. Our recommendations have moral force, and they have the force of independence, and I hope they have the force of reason and compelling argument. But in the end, the government is free to accept or reject.
Mm.
I guess that's the plight of every monitor.
Mm.
I mean, we want the absolute best, but very few monitors have the power to do more than to call out what they see. And it's part of an international movement. There is a convention that we've signed up to, the Protocol Against Crimes of Torture, Inhumane, Cruel and Degrading Treatment. And we're actually one of the first countries in the world to get on board with that. For instance, Australia only just ratified it last year or the year before. The process for visiting began in New Zealand in about 2008 under OPCAT. And this is part of that process. It's becoming increasingly more, I guess, sophisticated, well-resourced and focused.
Mm.
And we can visit both regularly and without notice. We can just turn up, literally. And so we want to see what's going on inside. I think that gives us a much better opportunity and likelihood of seeing what's really happening.
Mm. Mm.
So can we say from all of this that conditions will improve? Well, we hope so. I mean, surely everybody providing services, including detention services, knowing that there's independent checkups, that ought to be an incentive to doing better. But we know that these places of detention too often are also places where power is misused. I mean, that is the way of the world, and that's why independent monitoring is so important.
Sure. I also was talking this morning with Andrew Little about moves that he's making in the Justice Department for extending the rights of children through the process of family court. I wonder if you could touch on more generally about the kind of moves and reforms that we are making at the moment to stray away from the old-time belief that children should be seen but not heard. Do you have confidence that we're making strides away from that era of thinking?
Oh, it's been a slow process, to be honest. I think you're right. I mean, New Zealand, whether it's a throwback to the Victorian era or the seen but not heard philosophy, I think we have undervalued in New Zealand the role of children's voices, the role and perspective that young people can bring to policy development.
Mm.
I think it's been a slow journey in New Zealand. We've been reluctant to go as far as I think we should. There is a court case at the moment just raising the issue as to whether 16 and 17-year-olds ought to be prevented from voting, whether they can be involved. I mean, that's a good question. I think a lot of our policy and decisions would be quite different if 16 and 17-year-olds could vote.
Mm.
I think increasingly government departments are making much more decisive efforts to hear from children. For instance, the new Oranga Tamariki legislation was hugely influenced by the voices of children who'd been in care. They, for instance, said, why do you drop us at 17th birthday? Why can't we remain and get help, if we want to, through to age 21 or even 25? All our friends, if they go overseas or do training or go to university, they can always come back home at Christmas. We can't. Can't you extend the period for which we can be provided assistance? They also said, when you remove us as a family, as brothers and sisters, why do you split us up? And you know, there was nothing in the law that preserved sibling unity. That's in the law now because children and young people asked for it.
Mm.
So there are huge opportunities in New Zealand to do better, to hear from children and young people. And that's one of the key priorities in our office. I mean, another example, school boards of trustees. We have one student by law on a school board. It's pretty tokenistic. It's pretty hard for that pupil. Many schools now are beginning to think of having two or three or four students on the board to get a really representative student voice where the students can strengthen each other in their voice in that board process. I welcome that.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.